We're today docket number 88680, American Civil Liberties Union of Nevada versus Clark County School District. Council, welcome. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, can I reserve 5 minutes?
Yes, you may. Come on up.
Chris Peterson, on behalf of the ACLU of Nevada, if it may please the court. The issue before the court today is whether or not NRS 289.080 subsection 9 exempts any records from the Nevada Public Records Act. As this court has previously stated, for a statute to exempt records under the Public Records Act, it must do so clearly and unambiguously. If we look at the text of subsection 9, there's no reference to public records. There's no reference to confidentiality. There's no reference to the government being authorized to withhold any records.
Counsel, I want to just flip that.
Yes.
If we start with the MPRA, the MPRA accepts 080.
Yes.
Why isn't it in there? This is different than on the coroner's case, where we had to actually look. The MPRA exempted it. We had to look and see to apply it to see did this mean to apply to these people. Not to see whether or not we thought it was prudent that it was exempted or should be considered in some other fashion. So I'm struggling with how much credence do we give when the legislature says this statute is accepted and it's clear what's in there that it is.
Well, Your Honor, as you noted, once it's referenced in 239.010, then we have to look at the language of the statute to see where the exemptions are. The exemptions in 289.080 are actually in subsection 6 and 7 that specifically refers to confidentiality in withholding records. By comparison, subsection 9 doesn't contain any of that language. And when we look at that, because we're interpreting it narrowly, 6 and 7 is specifically referring to documents in the possession of the representative. They're effectively acting like defense counsel. And this is meant to mirror, in some ways, criminal procedure. If we view subsection 9 as being an exemption, then effectively the same discovery statutes that we see in criminal law, such as, for example, when criminal defendants have access to documents in the prosecutor's possession, that would also be an exemption. But we don't see that in 239.010. So the exemptions lie in 6 and 7. They don't lie in subsection 9. So, and again, it's looking specifically at the text there. It is a discovery statute. It's not a privilege when you look at just subsection 9. And then what CCSD is asking for this court to do is effectively imply a discovery or a privilege there in subsection 9. And the idea that it's asking this court to read in an exclusive right to access to a officer facing punitive action. But even their own privilege log undermines that theory because they've asserted this privilege over documents that the public had access to, newspaper articles, videos, documents sent directly to the officer under an investigation, emails, and Garrity warnings, but also to documents that the officer had access to under subsection 8, because he could have asked for the record of his own statement that was created by the investigator. Also, the privilege that CCSD is asking for here is impractical, because it cuts directly against the fundamental core of the MPRA. They're asking for a privilege that the government could trigger when it wanted to, because the government doesn't have to seek punitive action, even if it finds its officers engaged in misconduct. And it gets to dictate what goes into the investigative file. By comparison, the ACLU is only asking that the court find that there's no exemption under the subsection 9 to remand down to the district court to determine whether or not, to review each individual document and determine whether or not there are other privileges there may be applicable there. The other alternative offered by CCSD is for this court to go ahead and find all of these documents are exempt under the balancing test this court has. Now, sorry, Your Honor. I thought you had a question. But this court has never actually exempted an entire category of documents under the balancing test. That's typically a fact-driven determination made by the district court and then reviewed by this court. And the district court never actually made that determination for the documents at issue here. That being said, the interests at stake here are pretty much identical to what we saw in LVRJ versus LVMPD, at least those that were asserted by CCSD here. And arguably, the public's interest in this case is more than what we saw in LVRJ. You know, in that instance, the underlying incident involved basically an officer and his private family versus what we see here is an officer undisputably engaging in use of force on two juveniles in on a public street outside of public high school and in front of a crowd of kids. There's almost an immediate and actual response. The NAACP and the Now Action Network are demanding answers. And CCSD and then engages with the public on the subject. They then go to the public, do town halls, and they announce this investigation publicly, and they announce the result. So there's the same fundamental interest as we saw in LVRJ, but at the same time, the public interest is not just theoretical here. It is clear, as far as the response from the public, that there's something going on here. And what we see here is that, of course, the public has a right to know, one, whether or not this investigation was carried out properly, and two, why they didn't seek punitive action here. So, and the other, just to touch upon a few of the other, and before I move on beyond that, I want to say, if the court is going to give direction regarding how the district court should apply the balancing test, the court should at least mirror what it did in LVRJ, find the Gibbons test wouldn't be applicable here based upon the interest asserted, but then in turn, if it's going to be applying the CCSD balancing, give a functionally the same direction to the district court down below. They've also stated, CCSD has also claimed these documents should not be disclosed under the Juvenile Justice Privilege, NRS 62H.025. None of the young people in this case were arrested, and they were never under the jurisdiction of a juvenile court. One was issued citation, but that was never filed with the court. In fact, the Clark County District Attorney's Office decided not to move forward with the prosecution there. So unless the court has any additional questions at this point, I just want to reiterate again, we're not asking for an expansive ruling that all these records be automatically disclosed. What we're simply asking for is this court to find that subsection 9 doesn't create a disclosure, does not privilege any documents. It's not no exemption of the NPRA.
So where would you draw the line here in terms of personnel investigations? Like, are they all subject to disclosure?
No, Your Honor. I think what the court would need to do is review each of the documents individually, because obviously, depending on the circumstances, there may be more of a privacy interest under the CCSD test, or the government might have actual interests under the Gibbons test based upon the individual documents. I mean, when we look at the privilege here, CCSD has asserted in their privilege log the subsection 9 privilege over literally every document except for the ACLU's initial letter. And that's sort of the problem when we talk about these blanket exemptions. What really should be happening is that the district court should be reviewing each document, determining what may contain privileged information, and then, as this court has directed before, applying those privileges with a bias towards transparency. Does that answer the court's question?
Yes.
Thank you. If there are no further questions to the court at this time, could I reserve the rest of my time?
Sure.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors. Jackie Nichols on behalf of the Clark County School District. May it please the court. As indicated by the ACLU, this case is very specific. It is strictly about the interpretation of NRS 289.080 subsection 9. Now, this court gets to review this case under de novo because it is about statutory construction and interpretation. And in reviewing the statute, you get to look at NRS 289 as a whole in conjunction with NRS 239.010, which expressly lists as a statutory exemption 289.080. Now, what the ACLU is asking this court to do is carve out particular provisions within 289.080 within that exemption list. But that is not what the legislature did. The legislature specifically identified 289.080 as a statute in its entirety. And the mere fact that the term confidential is not used does not foreclose it being exempt. because the legislature identified it within that statute, and the public record case law throughout this jurisdiction by this court says, even if it's not identified as being exempt within this statutory scheme, there may be other privileges that could be asserted or other statutes that
With these exemption statutes, don't we construe those very narrowly unless there's a specific exemption that's applicable and express?
That is the case law, correct. You do, the court construes it narrowly, but it is still identified. And what is not identified within that exemption are specific statutory subsections. And I can give, as an example, NRS 179A.100 is also identified within that statutory scheme. And nothing in that statute specifically says, this document is confidential. Instead, what that provision identifies is limitations on dissemination, that it can only be disseminated or publicly disclosed under these circumstances. And it does list, I believe, A through O or P. And so, construing NRS 231.010 in conjunction with 289.080 subsection 9, the interpretation to read it harmoniously and that there is no conflict between the statutes is that disclosure is limited. Disclosure is limited in particular circumstances because if the legislature were to say it was confidential, that means the own peace officer wouldn't ever be able to even get his own statute. So what the legislature did in 2020 was carve out a particular provision that says, when no punitive action is recommended, nor punitive action is taken, that investigating officer gets no access to this, right? However, if punitive action is recommended, yet not taken, he gets to review it, which is also consistent with 239.010 in the sense of public records and inspection.
But doesn't legislative history indicate a particular reason for that that isn't consistent with what you're saying?
Legislative history of 289.080?
Mm-hmm. Nine.
Subsection 9. Mm-hmm. So we provided, if you look at the legislative history, and we also provided a declaration of Adam Levine, who served in support, right, of that provision, says the idea is if there is no punitive action even being recommended, there is no purpose for the investigative officer to even review what is being investigated. And that is in part and parcel, if you look at public policy and you're talking about government employees and investigations and wanting people to come forward, wanting people to report their own, wanting people to be forthcoming, if there is this notion that even if you get to be investigated and there's no punitive action, but your colleague gets to review your witness statement, gets to see your interview through a public records request, that completely undermines that policy, the public policy of coming forward.
Wasn't the discussion in the legislature protection of that officer if punitive actions were going to be taken?
It was that, as well as the other individuals coming forward, participating in the investigation, because these agencies require these employees to participate. They require these employees to be truthful and to be forthcoming. And so it is twofold. It is entirely to protect an officer's interest, but it is also when there is no punitive action, which is the situation we are dealing with here, is to protect the officers who are forthcoming, who are telling their truth from, for lack of a better term, being thrown under the bus and having deal with inner personal collegial issues, which addresses the next concern with interpreting the statute the way that ACLU is asking you to interpret the statute. If 289.080 subsection 9 does not limit the dissemination and public disclosure of these records. It entirely eviscerates that subsection, because what is going to happen is an officer is going to get notification pursuant to the Peace Officer's Bill of Rights under 289 that he's being investigated. And as that investigation occurs, he gets to do a public records request. He gets to do a public records request and completely bypass Internal Affairs. He bypasses Internal Affairs Bureau, their entire investigation, and he gets access to all the witness statements. He gets access to the actual transcripts. He gets access to everything that he is specifically being investigated for before there's even a determination. Even if there is a determination that he is not subject to punitive action or recommended for punitive action, despite that determination, he gets access to all of it. So then what would be the purpose of that statute?
If the court did a balancing test and analysis, wouldn't that address some of those concerns?
The balancing test is not appropriate because there is a specific statute. So under 239 and this court's jurisprudence, it is if there is a particular statute that limits disclosure, the court has to follow that. And so
let me ask you a question about that, because 239.010 doesn't say all of these statutes are exempted from the MPRA. What it says is, except as otherwise provided in this section, the MPRA itself, and this very, very long list of statutes, and some other things, that, and unless otherwise declared by law to be confidential, that everything is presumed to be open. So, I mean, isn't what the statute's saying there just what is determined to be confidential under the other statute that I've now lost? I've lost my number.
289.
Yes, thank you. Under 289, if it says confidential, right? If the statute has provisions for confidentiality.
So respectfully, the Clark County School District's position is it doesn't have to use the term confidential, because there are situations where blanket confidentiality is not appropriate. Limited dissemination is appropriate. And again, I'm going to refer this court to NRS 179A.100 and specific subsection 4 that discusses in what instances criminal history should be disclosed. And so this is very similar when we're talking about a peace officer and internal policies and procedures of an internal investigation. And when you look at subsection 9, it specifically says that a peace officer does not have access to that. And so when we look at the plain language and we talk about common sense, right, because that's what we get to do for statutory construction, and we have to avoid these absurd results. If you follow the ACLU's interpretation, the absurd result is the peace officer will, through NRS 289, be unable to obtain this investigative file, yet the public gets it, and then he could simply just do a public records request, which eviscerates the whole purpose of 289, because under the public records request, under the MPRA, you do not get to pick and choose who the requester is. You don't get to take that into consideration. You look at the format of the request and whether or not those documents are subject to disclosure. And any other interpretation of 289 would render it completely frivolous, because if not, the police officer himself will just simply avoid 289 and do a public records request. But Justice Bell, you had a question to the ACLU during their argument about where do you draw the line, and so even if this court determines that plain language just doesn't necessarily cannot be reconciled with the public records request, in the alternative, the school district's argument is that what we need to look as far as the investigative file, because that is not determined, or I apologize, defined under 289 is what is considered the investigative file, right? I don't think that there's any dispute that there could be a concern of some sort of agency shoving one report into another IA internal affairs file and like trying to use this as a privilege. That document would exist outside of the internal affairs file. And so there's still ability to get access to that file. And so, for example, if you look at the privilege log here, the investigative file is whatever what was relied upon by the internal affairs Bureau. So when you ask for the internal affairs investigative file itself, that is confidential under 289. However, there are other privileges or there are other statutes. So there is the body worn camera statute, 289. I'm sorry, I can't remember, but it deems it a public record. And so you can ask for the body-worn camera footage of that, and now you're back to statutory construction, and now you have a statute that specifically says this particular document in of itself, regardless of it being an investigative within a file, is a public record. And so that's where you can reconcile this public policy concern of just shoving things in a file. There are a number of documents, such as the CCSD's policies and procedures. While they were relied upon in determining whether or not a violation existed, that doesn't make the policy itself necessarily confidential. It is because you are asking for it as an investigatory file. If you ask for the policy and procedure outside of the file, you will get it. If you ask for the body-worn camera, which in this case, the ACLU did get the body-worn camera.
It's exactly what we addressed in the coroner's situation, correct?
Correct.
I mean, this is about the investigative file. You can't get that. But just because they seek out other information and put it in their file doesn't somehow insulate it. Go get it outside of the file. Right.
And what I think is really telling is this court's recent decision. It was the Clark County School District versus the District Court. It was issued November 25th, just a few weeks ago, and it dealt with FERPA. And it uses that same logic. Just because it pertains to a student doesn't mean it's automatically under the FERPA realm. There had to be some sort of, I believe this court used, like, intent was the language. You have to intentionally put it in the student's file. And so that is the same logic with the investigative file. As far as just
but
briefly,
wouldn't the district court really be in the best position to determine? So we avoid these issues of something being put into the investigative file to protect it when it otherwise wouldn't be.
So to answer that question, Your Honor, what I would say is it is to the extent that the court wants to go with the school district's alternative argument as far as what is created or generated specifically for purposes of the IA file to be considered it not subject to disclosure under 289, is that is a factual determination based off of the privilege log provided in this particular case to be sent back down to the district court to determine what was actually created. May I complete?
Go ahead, yes.
Thank you. What was actually created or generated for strictly purposes of the internal affairs investigative file versus what exists outside of that file. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'd like to start by going back to the language of subsection 9 and its relation to subsection 8. CCSD is arguing that there is effectively the only way that an officer would get access to the investigative file and the documents in the investigative file is through subsection 9. Now, first, obviously, again, in the language of subsection 9, there's nothing in there indicating there's no other ways or suggesting that this is an exclusive right to access that we might see in other statutes that talk about exclusive rights to access. And it's actually further undermined what we see in subsection 8, because presumably the recording of the officer's statement that was made to the investigator would be considered part of the investigative file, And so in turn, if the officer has a right to access that document, clearly that even in the statute itself, there's an alternative right to access to at least one of the documents in the investigative file. And then when we look at the arguments related to 239.010, that somehow all the statutes listed there create...
I want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly. So your argument is that if the officer has access to it, there should be public access to it?
No, not necessarily that. And I can come back to that. It's more that the argument that the investigative file access is the only way to get access to the documents in the file is undermined by the language of the statute itself. And I think it's worth also pointing out that different rights to access the documents in this file are not congruent to each other. This is an ultimate right to access under subsection 9, right? There's nothing in here that suggests that things would be redacted or be subject to a CCSD or a Givens balancing test or be subject to the 500 exemptions listed out in 239.010, right? So this is sort of an ultimate right of access for an officer facing punitive action the same way that a criminal defendant may have ultimate right to access to the documents in a prosecutor's file because it's a due process issue. You need to know all the information so you can protect yourself. But that doesn't mean that there's not other ways in, and I think that CCSD is overstating the power of the Public Records Act. Obviously, this court has seen a lot of litigation and has created a strong right to access through the Public Records Act, but it's not like that under subsection 9. Obviously, for example, if there's sensitive information related to a victim or related to confidential informant or if victims are afraid of retaliation, under the Public Records Act, that would be redacted. This court's already engaged with that in multiple cases. And then in turn, there's other things such as, we know there's going to be juveniles' names in here. Their information will be redacted as well. So I think that's the other thing is also the process itself. The Public Records Act process takes time. Even though it's supposed to be expedited, it does take time. There's back and forth. This is an immediate right to access because obviously as the process is going along, an officer is not going to wait to get the information they need to defend themselves, right, when they're facing punitive action. Going back to 239.010, there are a number of statutes listed in that full length of 500 statutes that not only contains subsections that create confidentiality, but subsections that actually require disclosure. Now, the example of this, just to give one example, would be NRS 91.160, which is talking about documents in the possession of the Administrative and Security Division of the Office of the Secretary of State. One subsection says certain documents are not public records. Another subsection says all these other documents are public records. So simply being included there doesn't mean the whole statute creates an exemption to the Public Records Act. Rather, we have to go to the specific language that we're looking at here. And then again, if we look back, and I want to emphasize this again, when we look at 289.080, there's subsections in there that expressly create exemptions to the Public Records Act under subsection 6 and subsection 7, and none of that language is reflected in subsection 9.
What about the argument, though, that logically, if the officer can only get it under certain circumstances, that it wouldn't be subject to public record disclosure?
So again, subsection 9 doesn't indicate they can't get any of these documents under other circumstances. There's nothing in there precluding them from seeking it under other statutes they might have access to. Again, an example would be they can seek at least one of those documents under subsection 8 if they ask. What it's saying, though, is that once this is triggered, right, once punitive action is sought, this right is triggered, that they can now immediately go seeking the unredacted records in their entirety in the investigative file. And I think something else that CCSD is bringing up is about the idea of retaliation, fear of retaliation when it comes to officers that come forward. The reality is, again, there's nothing actually discussed about retaliation inside 289.080. And this court, though, has in its precedent dealt with that exact concern in the prior when it created the CCSD balancing test. There are already protections in place if there's an actual fear of retaliation we're looking at here. And it's on the burden of the government to show in that particular case there's a concern about retaliation. It shouldn't just be an abstract concern or a speculative concern. It needs to be concrete. And so in turn, if there's actually a concern about retaliation here, and they can show that to the district court can make that determined redact as necessary. Let's see. And you know, I think it's just sort of a final touch point on this. I do want to emphasize that this provision, subsection 9, was in some ways designed and modeled after criminal discovery. And when we look at the criminal discovery statute this is based upon, so specifically the criminal defendant's right to access documents in a prosecutor's file, those are not listed under 239.010. And so in turn, I think by seeing that mirror there, it becomes clear the legislature never intended for subsection 9 to become a privilege or exemption under the Nevada Public Records Act when it includes it under 239.010. It's referring to 6 and 7. We've seen that in legislative history with 239.010. And then when it's talking about this subsection, it's really just empowering an officer that's facing punitive action to have effectively the same rights as a criminal defendant so they can properly defend themselves from allegations of misconduct. If there's no further questions, I'll concede the rest of my time.
Thank you. Okay.